A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really trying to shake off that kind of dusty image philosophy sometimes gets.
Yeah, definitely. We want to treat it as something urgent, something personal. We're diving into Edward Clegg's brilliant book, Philosophy, a very short introduction. It's a great starting point.
Absolutely. If you ever thought, you know, philosophy is just memorizing who said what when or getting lost in these dense old arguments, well, Clegg's core idea changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
He argues that philosophy isn't some static thing like a historical subject. It's an active, fundamental human practice. It's about basically creating your own map of reality.
That's a perfect way to put it. And this deep dive, I think it's really vital because Clegg just cuts through the jargon. He demystifies it all. He shows philosophy as this essential tool you need to consciously build your own guiding framework, your own way of seeing things, navigating the world. That framework, that's what he calls your worldview.
Your worldview. Okay. So our mission today really is to kind of distill the essence of Clegg's book and try to answer what actually is philosophy and, more importantly, why should it matter to you right here, right now? Okay, let's start with the author. Edward Clegg. He was with us until 2023, a really distinguished British academic philosopher.
Highly distinguished.
He held a Knightbridge Professorship of Philosophy at Cambridge. I mean, that's like top tier, really rigorous thinker.
Absolutely. But what makes his take on an introduction so unique, it isn't just that academic standing, impressive as it is. It's more about his other major contribution. He was the general editor for the massive 10-volume Routledge Encyclopedia of Philosophy.
Oh, 10 volumes. So if he edited the encyclopedia covering basically everything in philosophy,
exactly,
he must have had to synthesize the entire spectrum of thought.
Precisely. Think about the perspective that gives you an unparalleled sort of panoramic view of the whole discipline.
Yeah, I can see that.
He didn't just know one small corner. He saw how all the different bits, ethics, logic, metaphysics, you name it, how that all connect and function together. And that insight lets him boil philosophy down to its absolute essence for someone just starting out.
So it's less a history lesson, more a guide to the actual doing of philosophy.
That's it.
Okay, let's talk about the central idea then. Clegg argues that philosophy bubbles up from this really basic, universal human need, the need to develop a coherent, guiding worldview.
Mm-hmm. A consistent set of beliefs, values, the things that shape how we understand everything and decide what to do.
And crucially, he totally avoids the usual historical tour, either the from Thales down to today approach.
Yeah, thankfully. Instead, he uses this really clever framing device.
Yeah.
The hypothetical would-be philosopher, which is basically anyone listening, right?
Exactly. It represents you, the individual seeker, just trying to figure things out, trying to construct a reliable map for reality, for knowledge, for values.
So the book feels less like reading about philosophy and more like jumping into these classic high-stakes intellectual puzzles yourself.
Right. It throws you straight into dilemmas like Socrates' choice in prison or Descartes' radical doubt about everything. And he uses these really pivotal moments to explore the main territories of philosophy. Ethics, how to live, epistemology, what we can know, metaphysics, what's real, philosophy of religion. So the goal isn't to cover everything.
No, not at all. It's not exhaustive. It's illuminating. The idea is to equip you with the philosophical mindset, the tools, the sort of conceptual toolkit, so you can start asking better questions yourself, clearer, more critical questions.
Okay, let's dig into some examples. Philosophy in action, starting with ethics, how should we live? Clegg uses Plato's Crito. It's a classic.
Huge, powerful dialogue.
So Socrates is in prison, unjustly sentenced to death. His friend Crito comes along, offers him an escape plan. And Crito's arguments are based on, well, emotion, right? Loyalty, protecting Socrates' reputation, duty to his family.
Shows most people would find compelling.
Totally. But Socrates just pushes them aside. He insists the decision can't be based on feelings or reputation or even personal consequences. It has to be based purely on reason and principle.
And this is where he brings in the idea of the social contract, isn't it?
Exactly. He argues that by choosing to live in Athens, he implicitly agreed to obey its laws. Even if a law is being applied unjustly in his case, escaping would mean harming the state itself, violating this higher duty to justice and the laws.
And that's the huge takeaway right there, isn't it? Philosophy gives you this method, this way to move past the immediate emotional reaction or just doing what everyone expects.
Yeah, the sort of knee-jerk response.
Right. To find a reasoned basis for what you do. It's that fundamental shift from just instinct or convention to actual principle. Okay, so that demand for reasoned, justified action, it leads us straight into the next big area, epistemology. What can I actually know for sure? And here Craig zooms in on Descartes and his meditations. Descartes kicks things off with this incredibly radical approach, the method of doubt. He tries systematically to doubt absolutely everything he possibly can.
Everything, like doubting his senses.
Yep, doubting whether he's awake or dreaming.
And then he takes it even further, right, with the evil demon idea.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty out there, like imagining some powerful being whose whole purpose is to deceive him about everything.
It does sound extreme, but the point isn't just to be skeptical for skepticism's sake.
So it's not just philosophical paralysis. Like, how does he even get out of that hole of doubt he digs for himself?
He finds one single thing he cannot doubt, the famous cogito ergo sum.
I think, therefore I am.
Exactly. Even if this demon is tricking him about absolutely everything else, there has to be something that's doing the thinking, doing the doubting. That thinking I must exist.
Ah, I see. So the fascinating thing here is how he uses skepticism, not as an endpoint, but as a tool, like a shovel, really, to clear away all the shaky beliefs, all the assumptions, to find solid bedrock. That's the philosophical drive. Finding beliefs you can actually justify, beliefs that rest on something solid. Okay, so Descartes establishes, okay, I exist as a thinking thing. But then that immediately raises the next huge question, doesn't it? What am I?
Precisely. And bam, you're right into the mind-body problem.
Right. If my mind, my thinking self, is this non-physical thing, as Descartes concluded, how on earth does it interact with my physical body? Like, how does a purely mental decision I want to raise my arm actually make my physical arm go up?
It's a massive puzzle and still debated fiercely today, especially, you know, with discussions around AI consciousness and stuff like that. Craig touches on how others tried to solve it.
Like materialism.
Yeah, materialism or physicalism. The idea that ultimately mental states are just complex brain states,
mm-hmm.
physical processes in the brain.
Or the other extreme, idealism.
Right. The idea that maybe only minds and ideas are truly real, that the physical world is secondary or even an illusion.
So that seemingly simple question, what am I, just blows open these huge metaphysical questions. You can't really build your worldview, your map, without tackling what kind of thing you fundamentally are. A physical machine, a ghost in the machine, something else.
And this struggle, trying to define reality and how we know it, leads naturally to these fundamental strategies philosophers adopt. The big isms.
Yes, the isms.
The central clash, Craig highlights, is rationalism versus empiricism.
Okay, so rationalism. Descartes is the big example here, right? The idea that reason, pure thought, is the main source of knowledge, independent of our senses. Like, doing math, you can figure stuff out just by thinking.
Exactly. And then empiricism, you've got philosophers like Locke and Hume championing this. They argue that sensory experience is the primary source. The mind starts as a blank slate, and all knowledge comes from what we see, hear, touch, etc.
And connecting this back to the worldview idea, Craig's point is that these aren't just random doctrines to memorize.
No, not at all. He presents them as fundamental strategies, different starting points, different basic rules for how you decide what counts as reliable knowledge when you're building your map of reality.
That difference seems crucial, because if I start building my map primarily with reason, it's going to look fundamentally different than if I only trust what my senses tell me.
Absolutely. And understanding these different foundational approaches, these epistemic policies, as Craig sometimes calls them, helps explain why philosophical debates can seem so intractable. People are often starting from very different places.
Okay, it makes sense. Now, Craig also emphasizes that philosophy isn't just about building worldviews.
Right. It's also about critically examining them, sometimes even tearing them down. He uses David Hume and Friedrich Nietzsche as key examples of this critical function.
Hume first. How does he illustrate this?
Well, Hume famously used his empiricist principles, specifically reasoning about probability, to critique religious beliefs. His argument against miracles is a classic example.
The miracle argument. How does that go again?
Basically, Hume argues it's always, always more probable that the person reporting a miracle is mistaken or perhaps lying than it is that the fundamental established laws of nature were actually violated.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful skeptical tool based on experience.
Okay. And then there's Nietzsche. He seems even more radical.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Nietzsche launched this blistering attack on traditional Western values, especially Judeo-Christian morality. He called it a slave morality, a system invented by the historically weak, he argued, to restrain the naturally strong and creative individuals. He called for a complete revaluation of all values.
Wow, that's provocative, extremely. But the point Craig is making is that a key power of philosophy lies right here: its ability to critically dismantle the worldviews we inherit, to challenge our most cherished, deeply held beliefs, no matter how sacred they seem. So it's construction and deconstruction.
Exactly. Let's maybe zoom out a bit and pull together the really key themes Craig wants us to grasp from all this.
Good idea. Theme number one.
Philosophy is the reflective construction of a worldview. Like we said, everyone has a worldview, but philosophy is the process of actually thinking about it, making it conscious, making it consistent, making it strong.
Right, because an unexamined worldview is probably pretty fragile, maybe contradictory.
Precisely. Theme two, skepticism as an intellectual tool, not as a dead end, but using doubt, like Descartes did, as a way to clear away unexamined assumptions and biases, which feels incredibly relevant today with, information overload and figuring out what's true online. Totally applicable. Theme three, the primacy of reason and justification. This is fundamental. Philosophy demands that we move beyond just saying, this is what I believe, to explaining why we are justified in believing it. That demand for reasons, for justification, it underlies pretty much every serious field, doesn't it? Science, law, everything. And theme four, the critical function of philosophy. It's a liberating force. It challenges dogma, tradition, unquestioned authority, and the goal of that challenge is intellectual autonomy.
Exactly. The freedom to actually construct a worldview that is truly your own, not just one you've passively accepted from somewhere else.
Okay, those are powerful themes. Craig doesn't use a ton of direct quotes, does he? He focuses more on the core arguments. That's right. But we can paraphrase some of the core philosophical statements that really capture the essence of the journey he takes us on, like starting with Socrates and the Crito.
Okay. The core idea there could be put something like this: a decision about how to act should not be based on emotion, popular opinion, or personal consequences, but on a rational principle that we have examined and can defend with sound arguments. You see, it's that sharp turn from just convention to reasoned ethics. Yeah, that's clear. And the second core idea from Descartes' method, that would be something like, to find absolute certainty, I must first treat as false anything that can be doubted in the slightest, until I discover a belief so fundamental that it's impossible to doubt. It captures that radical use of skepticism as a filter for finding solid ground, a filter we definitely need today. And the third one, from Hume on miracles, maybe something like, no testimony is sufficient to establish a miracle, unless the testimony be of such a kind that its falsehood would be more miraculous than the fact which it endeavors to establish. It really shows how that empiricist, probability-based reasoning can be applied to challenge extraordinary claims. Okay, these are great distillations, so let's bring it home. How can we actually use this stuff in everyday life? Well, application one is pretty direct. Enhance critical thinking and media literacy. Take Descartes' method of doubt. Apply it to the news, to social media feeds, instead of just scrolling and reacting.
Is this source reliable? What are the underlying assumptions here? What biases might be at play? Could I be, metaphorically speaking, dreaming this headline? What fundamental premise would I have to doubt to question this narrative?
That's practical. Okay, application two.
Improved ethical decision making. Use the Socratic method, that demand for principles, in your own life, at work, in personal dilemmas.
How would that look? Instead of just reacting emotionally or going with the flow, step back, clarify your core principles, what really matters here, and maybe ask that Kantian style question, what if everyone acted in this way? It forces you to think about the universal implications of your choice, not just your immediate situation. That forces consistency. Okay, one more. Application three, and this is maybe more subtle but really important, developing intellectual humility and empathy. How does philosophy help with that?
Well, when you start to understand these different isms, rationalism, empiricism, etc., not just as wrong ideas, but as coherent, logical systems built on different starting points.
You can see why someone might hold a different view.
Exactly. It allows you to engage more respectfully with people you disagree with. You can see that the difference might stem from fundamentally different assumptions about reality or knowledge, rather than just assuming the other person is ignorant or acting in bad faith.
That feels really valuable right now. Okay, as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing that really struck you or maybe surprised you about Craig's approach?
For me, what really stood out was how effectively he transforms philosophy. It stops being this, dusty academic subject
Yeah.
and becomes this urgent personal invitation, an invitation to live an examined life, as Socrates would say. The real value isn't necessarily in finding final answers from ancient thinkers, but in the clarity and self-understanding we gain through the process of questioning itself.
I completely agree. My lasting insight is similar. It's about that goal of intellectual autonomy, freedom from just accepting secondhand opinions or beliefs without really thinking them through. The true power, Craig reveals, lies in the method of philosophy, the toolkit he gives you, not necessarily the specific conclusions you might reach at any given moment. Well said. And maybe a final provocative thought for everyone listening to chew on, something Craig's book really pushes us towards. Okay, laid on us. He argues pretty strongly that an unexamined worldview is inherently fragile, likely inconsistent. So the question to ask yourself is, what is the single most deeply held belief you possess that you have never seriously questioned? And taking a cue from Descartes, what foundational assumption underlying that belief would you need to doubt, truly doubt, in order to genuinely test its strength? Wow, that's definitely something to mull over.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.